طفلة تمتطي قوس قزح، طفلة تمتطي.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to This Week in Palestine, a weekly broadcast of news, analysis, commentary, and discussion of issues relevant to the Palestinian struggle for freedom from Israel's continuing occupation and colonization of their homeland. This program features the Palestinian narrative from a perspective we do not get from the mainstream media. This Week in Palestine was created by Sharif Pham and is continued in his memory. This is your host, John Roberts. We know that the Boycott, Divestment, and Sanctions Movement, BDS, is enjoying enormous success, if for no other reason than it has become the target of an aggressive and well-financed campaign promoting anti-BDS legislation by the infamous Jewish lobby at both the state and national level. Originally, the BDS campaign was scoffed at by both the Israeli government and the lobby as weak and ineffectual, but no more. BDS is gaining enormous momentum, and the response now is to try to somehow outlaw it. Fortunately, the U.S. Constitution seems to be standing in their way, although they are trying several creative ways to get around it, so far quite unsuccessfully. Ali Abu Nima, writing in the Electronic Intifada, wrote the following concerning the latest legislative attempt in the U.S. Senate. Senator Elizabeth Warren has announced she opposes the Israeli Anti-Boycott Act. I think the boycott is wrong, but I think outlawing protected free speech activity violates our basic constitutional rights, Warren told constituents at a rally in Revere, Massachusetts. After slamming the bill, Warren turned to Catherine Clark, a member of the U.S. House of Representatives, who shared the stage with her, and asked her, "Do you feel the same?" When Clark apparently signaled assent, Warren said to the audience, "Good, we've got two of us here." Warren's opposition to the bill comes after her fellow Democrat, New York's Senator Kristen Gillibrand, pulled her sponsorship from the legislation last week. The American Civil Liberties Union wrote to members of Congress last month, urging them to oppose the bill, which it termed a direct violation of the First Amendment. As first reported by the Electronic Intifada in April, the Israeli Anti-Boycott Act is the most draconian of the dozens of bills introduced in state and federal legislatures in recent years in an attempt to curb the growth of the Boycott, Divestment, and Sanctions BDS movement for Palestinian rights. The powerful Israeli lobby, AIPAC, has made the bill one of its top legislative priorities. As Josh Rubner of the U.S. Campaign for Palestinian Rights explains, the bill would impose fines of up to $1 million and criminal penalties of up to 20 years in prison against any U.S. person, including individuals, whose actions further a boycott of Israel or of Israeli settlement products call for by an international governmental organization. Rubner adds, it would even criminalize the requesting or furnishing of information about such a boycott. The bill would also deny government loans through the Export-Import Bank to firms that refuse to do business with corporations based in or operating out of Israeli settlements in occupied territory, which are illegal under international law. Despite her reputation as a firebrand progressive, Warren has never been courageous on the question of Palestinian rights. Nothing symbolized her fear better than when she was caught on video hurrying away from a question about Israel's assault on Gaza 3 years ago that killed more than 2,200 Palestinians. Warren, along with fellow progressive stalwart Bernie Sanders, joined other members of the Senate in signing a letter in April reaffirming key lobby talking points that Israel is being unfairly picked by efforts at the UN to hold it accountable. Her opposition to BDS means she continues to stand against a nonviolent movement for equal rights by a people subjected to decades of Israeli occupation, settler colonialism, and apartheid, enabled largely by U.S. military and political support. But Warren's willingness to oppose this bill reflects the ongoing challenge to Democratic Party leaders from a base that is far more supportive of Palestinian rights. It also recalls a warning in a leaked report from a prominent Israeli lobby group earlier this year that anti-BDS laws are raising concerns over violations of free speech, which may alienate potential supporters of Israel. Other lawmakers are being challenged over their support of the bill, too. As Mondo Rice reported, Ron Wyden, a Democratic senator from Oregon, was repeatedly challenged over his support for it at a town hall meeting in Portland. Wyden, who has a reputation for supporting civil rights, got flustered by hecklers and questioners, Mondo Weiss observed. The senator conceded that the impetus for the bill was in fact that the boycott movement has grown. That was excerpts from an article by Ali Abu Nima in the Electronic Intifada. But while both Senator Warren and Representative Clark made a modest move in voicing opposition to this latest Senate bill based on First Amendment concerns, they have not been able to go all the way and voice their support for BDS. They obviously still consider that touching the third rail of American politics. We have work to do with our congressional delegation, and that's for sure. Okay, moving on. This week we feature a conversation with a remarkable Palestinian educator who is pioneering an effort to promote the use of a unique approach to therapy called expressive therapy in a society that experiences constant trauma living under Israeli military occupation. Hitam Edelby is working on her PhD at Lesley University, where she also received her bachelor's and master's degrees. She lives in East Jerusalem, but grew up in the Aka area of Israel as part of the 20% of the Israeli population who are Palestinian Arabs. You will hear her story, and you will hear about how she is using expressive therapies to help her people cope with the stress of living under military occupation. We spoke together in Cambridge just hours before she boarded her flight back home after spending the summer working on her doctorate at Lesley. Hitam, welcome back to This Week in Palestine. This is your third appearance on the show, and you're here in Cambridge this summer finishing your second year in the PhD program at Lesley University. Your field is expressive therapies. You already have your master's degree and are doing some amazing work in Palestine, which we will get to in a minute. But first, tell us what expressive therapies is and why you think it is especially important to use in Palestine.
It is basically using different kind of art and therapy And in my case, because I had the multi-program where we had music, dance, movement, drama, theater, and painting, and writing as well. And we are using that, all kind of that, in our work. I'm using it in my work when I work with children and teachers and even younger children as well. So the reason I use more than one kind of art is because some people like to do kind of art, but they don't like to do the other kind of art. Like, for example, I work with women who like to do some drama, but some other women don't like to do drama. They want to do dance or drumming or painting. So we have that variety that we offer and we provide to the groups, and each can use the art he likes or she likes to do. And the reason I find it very important in Palestine, because it is basically tools to express yourself. We use it to express ourselves. And kids, adolescents as well, need to do that in Palestine under the circumstancing that stands we live in, and the rough and the tough situation. It's like a tool to open ourselves and to talk about ourselves and to talk about the harsh and complicated and difficult situation we live in under the occupation. And in some cases, we manage to help kids and adults to use art in that. And when they don't want to do art, I give them the opportunity just to express that verbally, and when they feel that they have the need to do art and they want to do art, I always provide the art, and I always have the art with me, and yeah.
Well, how do they get to you, or how do you get to them? Who are the kids and the families that you work with?
In some cases, I seek the kids, and in some cases, the kids seek me. Mm-hmm. Like when I work with the Bedouin sector, I seek volunteers who come from the villages, and the volunteers help me reach out and help me go to the villages and do work with the villages inside the village. So I get my car and I fill my car with art supplies, sometimes also toys and games, and I go to the village and I do the activities with the help from volunteers, and I do the activities within the village with the children inside their neighborhood. In other case, I go to the schools. Like I do some work in one of UNRWA schools in Qalandia refugee camp. I contacted the school and the counselor there, and I offered my project to do expressive art with a group of adolescents there. And the school, with the principal and the counselor, welcomed the idea. And I went for around 5 months weekly session. Each session went for almost 3 hours. So we sat and talked, and we did art, and we played some games and toys. And the idea was to give them the opportunity to talk about themselves, and when they wanted to do that through the painting or the drawing or the music, well, they were allowed to do that as well.
So the young people in Palestine are really a traumatized group. The young people living under military occupation, seeing the military in the streets almost every day.
I think it's beyond traumatized. It's not like they were traumatized. They live undergoing and under ongoing trauma, because no way what to expect. I mean, you open your eyes, you want to go to head to school or to work, but you for a single minute. You can't guarantee whether you will reach the school or the work or the visit or the shopping, because outside the house, you never know what's going to happen. You don't know whether the road will be open or not. You don't know whether the checkpoint will be open or not. So you plan your plan. You have your view. You have your plan that you want to go for. But you can't be 100% sure that your plan will be will become real.
And these boys, you were particularly interested in them because of the...
I'm still, and I think I will be all the time, interested in this population, the adolescent population. I believe that it is somehow very neglected population in Palestine. And they are, in many cases, called the troublemakers. And the reason they are neglected or abandoned sometimes is because we, the adults, we, the educators, or we, the parents, don't know how to deal with them. So I try as much as I can to seek and work with them, and I love it, and I think they are very creative. And in this particular age, they become even more and more creative when they get the opportunity to be creative and to use their time in a good way and in a positive way.
Now, you do not work for a particular school or institution.
No, you, I'm freelancer.
You're freelance, and you operate out of your car, and you're on the road constantly.
4 days a week.
Right.
Yeah.
And you go into these communities or these schools or institutions or whatever, and you begin work, but who do you work with? And after you work with this particular group, then what happens? Are the people there to pick up their work? Are you training people to do the work so that when you leave, it continues?
Yeah. I always have somebody with me. Like when I work with the group in the school, the counselor is there. In most cases, he participates in all activities. And when I am not there, he also conducts similar activities or kind of activities to the activities I do with them. But also the people are creative. They also create the counselors also create new things and establish new programs. But they do get training from me, like volunteers in the Bedouin sectors. When they volunteered with me last year, they were with me almost every week. So we work together. It's not like they were just witnessing my work.
Right.
They did
so
the work.
So you're training, you're constantly...
Yeah, it is like sharing and volunteering and witnessing and training, yeah.
How long do you usually commit to a community like that? You go into a community...
Minimum 5 months.
5 months.
Minimum.
That's,
yeah.
I see, five
yeah.
months.
It's not like... It's not that I go there once a year or twice a year,
right.
And then I jump to another place. I like the long-term programs so I can build something and this thing gets settled. I don't say that what I leave behind is 100% perfect. There is no perfect. But I do feel that after a couple of months, the people there get the idea, get the core, and they get the goal of the expressive art, and they can continue. They need the materials, and they need sometimes the space, and they need the ability to continue. But so many people love the program, and so many people get into it, and so many people, like Hamda in Arab al Jahalin village, she established her own project right now, and she just graduated from school only a couple of months ago.
From what level school?
She went to the university and she became social worker, and she graduated three months ago. Last year she volunteered with me in the Bedouin villages, And after she graduated, she said, Khitam, I want to establish my own project in my own village. Would you help me? I said, of course I will help you. So she was looking in the village and she found an abandoned trailer that was used before for certain activities. Not anymore. They closed it because it wasn't funded.
I see.
So she took it. She cleaned it, I helped her, and we got some stuff, and I helped her with some money, and we got art supplies, toys and games, used furniture, and we started. Since then, she is in the trailer twice a week, one day for children and one day for women. Some women come and volunteer with her and help her. And they are doing fine. During Al-Fitr feast, they had 60 kids who came and played and had fun and did art. Hamda.
How did she already had access to the kids and the kids came?
Yeah, from
the
village.
And they return. They
come. They go every Monday. Uh-huh. Yes, after school. During the school year, they go from 1 to 3 afternoon, because they have to be in the school in the morning time, and so they go after school. But now in the summertime, they go in the morning from 10 to 12, 12:30. And when I go back this week, I will go visit her and see how we're going to continue the work. And I will continue my work. I will continue helping her once a week for the whole coming year.
So that in this Bedouin village, this is not a part of the school. This is an extracurricular activity. This is something the kids
yes.
come to voluntarily.
Yeah.
They hear about it and they
yep.
come and they keep
yep.
coming.
Yep.
They keep coming back.
Yep. It locates in the middle of the village, not far from a kindergarten and not far from the school, but it is not related. I mean, Hamda collaborates with the school and the kindergarten because she needs water and electricity from them for the trailer. But it is separate project. It's not related to the school.
Okay, so, and you will work with this village for, let's say, This coming
yes,
year?
Yes, yes.
So you've committed to an entire year to
yeah.
work with the...
At least 8 months.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, hopefully, when you leave, there will be a group of people sort of steeped in and trained.
Hopefully.
And
hopefully,
they will
but
continue.
They do need, yeah, hopefully. They do need the support to do so.
Yeah.
So far, Hamda works with no money. She has no salary. She
yeah.
gets no salary. So she is doing this from her, you know, her time. And she is loving it. I mean, and she enjoys it. And she is seeking for fund. She's seeking fund. So hopefully if she gets some fund, this will also push her to continue and get some salary, you know, to live from as well. So this will encourage her more and more.
So are most of your projects like that? You go and then they have to raise money to
yeah.
keep it going? You have to
yeah.
raise money for
yeah.
supplies?
Yeah, I'm trying to help in that. We have another counselor who is very close, a friend to us, and he was her counselor when she did school, Nasser Hamamra. He is very, very generous and he is very smart and he is so much into helping Palestinian projects when it comes to the schools or after school programs. And he also will volunteer to do some work with her and he will give sessions either weekly or monthly, I'm not sure yet. But he's going to be very good support for her as well.
And it's the same story for you. You're not working, you're not on anyone's payroll, as I understand it.
No,
you have to raise your own money.
I am. This is what I'm doing.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so there's real pressure here to be able to maintain the resources. This program takes a lot of resources. Art supplies,
yeah.
to say nothing about the gas for travel and all that's behind this. And all this is raised in sort of in the private sector. There's no NGO involved here. Is that right?
Correct.
Correct. Now, in Palestine, is expressive therapies taught anywhere in the university? Is it used very
Unfortunately, not in any university. But since I graduated in 2009, and I was back to Palestine, be honest, I found that so many people welcoming the program. I taught it in different schools, and I offered it in many organizations, and I trained till now probably 400 to 500 teachers.
So
I go to the organization or I go to the institute and I offer my project, and they think about it and they seek the money for it and they hire me to do the project. So some projects I go for 3 months, some projects takes 6 months. So the institution or the organization or the school gets the fund for the project. So I do the project, I get paid from them, but after I finish, they don't continue because they have no one, unless the teachers who are trained, who were trained with me, are teaching at the same school, and they do continue the project.
So then in Palestine, you're really a pioneer in this effort. I mean, expressive therapies is relatively new, and it is
new, and we have probably another 3 or 4 expressive art therapists maximum.
3 or 4?
Maximum. And the other side of Palestine, in Palestine 48, like in Haifa, Akka, Galilee, you find more art therapists because they do it at the Israeli universities. Mm-hmm. The Israeli universities
offer... So they have institutional backing.
Yes, the Israeli universities offer the program, but not the Palestinian. And this is my hope and this is my goal, to have this program in our university and in the Palestinian universities as well.
Okay, I want to get to that in a minute. How did you get into expressive therapies? How did you hear about it? How did you get turned on to it?
In 2004, January 2004, I used to work at the Palestinian Counseling Center. Dr. Julia Byers from Lesley University, who at that time was the head of the PhD program, came to Palestine and came to the center, and she wanted to go to Jenin refugee camp to work with women and young women who lost their husbands or siblings during the massacre 2 years before, in 2002, when the Israeli military invaded the camp and demolished around 100 houses, and many were killed. So Julia Byers spoke no Arabic, and she needed someone to go with her who could translate. And we went in a very hard, secret way, but we did it. And we were there for 2 days, and for 2 days she worked with probably 15 women, helped him writing stories and singing songs and writing poems and creating artwork about themselves, for themselves, about their husbands, for their husbands. And it was fascinating. It fascinated me and amazed me what she did and how they opened themselves and how they talked about their loss and how they grieved their grief. And there, in Jenin refugee camp, I asked myself, if Dr. Julia Byers, who doesn't speak any Arabic single word, could do this with my people, I can do this with my people.
So you really saw the, quote, therapy work.
Yes.
You really saw change.
Yes.
In just 2 days.
In 2 days.
And enough so you said, this is what I want to do.
I told Julia the same night, I am considering Lesley. I want to come to Lesley. And Dr. Julia looked at me and said, I already see you there.
That's wonderful.
That's what happened.
Yeah.
Since then, I said, I'm coming to Lesley.
You came to Lesley.
Yep.
And you got your master's.
Yeah.
You're 2 years into your doctorate.
Yep. Starting the second year. Yes.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Now, where do you see a program like this going? You want to get your doctorate,
mm-hmm.
and you want to go back to Palestine, obviously.
I am in Palestine.
You are in Palestine, yeah. And what's your vision for your future? You'll get your, you have another year of another summer. You'll be here in Cambridge at Lesley,
mm-hmm.
and then you'll take a year or so for your
thesis.
You're, mm-hmm. you're working on mm-hmm. that, getting that together, and you'll graduate.
Yep.
Hopefully.
Hopefully, 2 years from today. Hopefully.
2 years.
Yeah.
And then what? What do you see as your vision having a PhD going back to Palestine? You obviously saw the need to get your PhD. Now, what do you want to do with it?
The need came from more than one reason. I really hope I can teach at the Palestinian universities.
Mm-hmm.
And having PhD may give me more chance or open more doors for me to do so. The second thing is the research itself. I mean, I'm doing my research about, I believe, a unique subject with a unique population. I'm exploring or experiencing playback theater with adolescents in the refugee camp, in Qalandia refugee camp. And playback theater is a unique art form.
Tell us about playback.
Playback theater is the theater where one of the audience, we call him the teller, tells his personal story, and the actors act the story on the spot, improvise the story in front of him. After that, they go back to the teller and ask him about his opinion,
mm-hmm.
and he reflects to what he witnessed, what he saw, and how the story that he saw was close and related to the story he told. And if this has therapeutic element, and usually people bring stories that touch them and talk to them and come from them and has something deep in them. And when they bring it to the audience, when they bring it to the stage, it's like sharing others, telling others about my own story.
And there's real therapeutic value in that.
There is, yes, definitely.
So your thesis is going to be sort of
about exploring how adolescents in the refugee camps tell their personal stories through playback theater.
And you're going back. You'll be doing this coming year. You'll be working on
this coming year. I will have to start my pilot study that I will conduct and. At the Freedom Theater in Jenin refugee camp, where they do playback theater,
mm-hmm.
and I want to interview some of adolescents who are doing playback theater and facilitators who are training them in this art form. For my research, I will work directly with small group of adolescents and do with them playback theater. So this is the main research mm-hmm. 2 years from today. But the pilot research will be based on interviews at the Freedom Theater. And this is the only theater in Palestine where they do teach and conduct and present playback theater.
Very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Now, your goal is to teach at the university level. Your goal, obviously, is to train teachers to do this, train people to do this?
I am doing that. But I will take it to maybe to extra level, to a higher level.
Will you need to sell universities on this? I mean, are the universities, or do you know people within the university structure that know expressive therapies?
I do. I did already some contacts,
mm-hmm.
and I met with the head of the drama section at Beit Lahem University and the education department at Beer Zeit University. And we had we didn't get in much details, but it was a brief introduction. And hopefully when I come back this summer, I will meet with them again and see what we can do together. If not this year, maybe after I graduate.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you go back, besides working on the PhD and the stand-up theater project, you will be working with the Bedouin community.
Yes.
And you continue to work with a number of other communities that you've been working with right along, right? How many groups are you working with, or how many?
During the week, I work with four different groups. One group that has children from the Bedouin sector,
mm-hmm.
the adolescents group in Qalandia refugee camp, the teachers group that I usually train at a center where they qualify teachers for schools, and the fourth group will be the women group.
Mm-hmm.
The women group, some of them are mothers of martyrs, and they live between Qalandia checkpoint, Qalandia refugee camp, and Ramallah, in that area that we call Qalandia, Samiramis, Kufr Aqab, and locates on the road between Ramallah and Qalandia refugee camp. So the women, group of women between 10 to 12. I did that last year, and I hopefully I will do this mm-hmm. year as well. It's a weekly session that where we also do art, but we also sometimes just talk and tell stories and talk about self and about life, about what they face with their children, and the children who are in the prisons. Some of them even lost their children. Their children were killed recently during the last couple of years. So some of them, yeah, they are still grieving and full of sadness and full of heaviness. But they all evaluated in very positive way our sessions last year. They found it that it was a space to talk and mm-hmm. cry and to be themselves and to talk about their loss and to laugh sometimes and to sing loss sometimes and to get some happiness sometimes. It's mm-hmm. It's not all about just sadness things, because we do have to help them. I try as much as I can to help them capture positive points in our life and good things in our life, what's left in our life, to continue. We mm-hmm. have to continue. We have to keep on. Life goes on, and we can't bury ourselves with our kids. Our kids are buried. We have to continue mm-hmm. with those who are still alive. Mm-hmm. If we buried our husband, we still have the kids, we have siblings, we have families, we have friends, and we have life that have to keep on. So,
in some of the first communities that you work with, or the first groups you work with, you, I take it in a sense, finished with some of them.
Mm-hmm.
You left behind people that hopefully will continue the work,
mm-hmm.
teachers, parents, etc., mm-hmm. continue to do it. Has that been successful, to your knowledge? Are most of these still going?
Can't tell that all the volunteers or all the people who worked with me are doing the same. First mm-hmm. of all, they don't have to do the same anyway.
Mm-hmm.
They have to do it in their own way. I mean,
right.
they capture what they capture, mm-hmm. they take what they get, they take what they take, and they do it in their own way. But I do strongly believe that some, yes, are doing art therapy and some believing in it, and some actually thinking about taking more courses and mm-hmm. more training with me. Some women are conducting what they had with me, with other women. And I know from many teachers who got trained with me, who took long-term sessions with me, are doing this with their kids in school. This is for sure.
Yeah, because it seems to me that what you're doing is you're building a movement, really. You're building a movement where expressive therapies are seen as important to growth and to therapy, to getting through these traumatized situations. And Palestine is no more traumatized society on the face of the earth than Palestine. It seems to me that this is going to be very, very important when you go to a university and you say, we need in Palestine expressive therapies, we need to grow the movement, we need to train, we need to teach, etc. We need universities to do this, and this is what I want to do. It seems to me that this movement will be very, very important for you to say, look what we've done. Look what we've done with nothing, almost. Look, you know, with no institution behind us, we've built this movement.
Yeah.
And it seems to me that's the picture you're painting.
The reason I could go back to Palestine after my graduation and start my own institution or my own NGO. I didn't want to do that. We have plenty. We have tons of NGOs in Palestine. Mm-hmm. I didn't think we need more than we had. And I thought that if I manage to reach them, why to have a new one since I can get my program and get this new art form through what we have in Palestine, through our schools and through the organizations that they are already there and through the universities. Why to establish, why to create a special center for expressive art therapy when we can get it through other centers and through other universities or through other schools?
Yeah, that's so you're going. So that's why it's becoming a movement
spreading.
All through this. It's not located in a place.
No. Yeah, it's not located.
It's located in many places.
Yeah, that's how I believe in it, and that's why I have my mobile art car, and that's how the whole idea of the mobile art bus started. That we don't locate in one place and we don't wait to the people to come to us. We reach out, we reach the people, we go to the people, we go to where we know there is a big need. And this is what I'm doing so far for 9 years almost.
Were you at one point were talking about trying to get into Gaza to do the same kind of thing.
Yeah, but I tried many times. Yeah. I asked, and for me, with the Israeli passport, it's almost impossible. Yeah. I am Palestinian, carry the Israeli passport because this is the only document I can have, but it doesn't allow me to get it. It needs a lot of process, and it needs to have so many contacts, and because I don't belong to any institution, I don't work with Save the Children, or I don't work with UNRWA, these big names, these big backs that they can back up you. I don't think I will never ever get a chance to get to Gaza unless one of the big ones say, yeah, we want you, and we're going to help you, and let's get into Gaza. Mm. It's my dream. I would love to.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, well, it sounds like you've got a lot on your plate, and we know that because we're in touch with you year-round, and we know the work you're doing with the kids. We know how hard this PhD program is. We've watched you with that. It's been a long time. How many years now have you been coming to Lesley?
I did 4 years between 2005 and 2009. Mm-hmm. I completed first my bachelor's and immediately started the master's. So I went for 4 years. 2009, I was back to Palestine. And last year, 2016, I was back to start the PhD program. That should take maximum 4 years, hopefully.
Mm-hmm. So you'll be back next summer.
And the summer after for graduation.
The summer after for graduation.
If everything is done by
yeah.
then, yes.
Yeah. Well, congratulations and thanks very
Thank
much.
You. We, Thank
we,
you so
we've
much.
Watched this grow, and it's amazing work. And we know the need that it's fulfilling in the Palestinian society. We hear your stories, and we're very grateful that you're there, as I'm sure are the Palestinian people.
Thank you so much.
That was a conversation with Kitam Edelby, an expressive therapist living and working in the West Bank of Palestine. And that is it for this week. Thank you for listening to This Week in Palestine, a weekly feature of Truth and Justice Radio. You will find us here at 90.3 FM every Sunday morning at 8 a.m. You can also stream us live on your computer at WZBC.org. We thank you for your time, and we hope you will join us again next Sunday and every Sunday for another edition of This Week in Palestine. This is your host, John Roberts, wishing you a good morning.